This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, there's two candidates for the Texans head coaching job that are doing second interviews today because their teams are no longer playing. Mike Kafka, the offensive coordinator for the Giants. Ejiro Evero. Ben, cue up his pronunciation one more time so I make sure I'm doing this right.
My name is Ejiro Evero, and I am the defensive coordinator.
Boy,
for
he is smooth with it. He pronounces it really well.
It's like he's been saying it his whole name.
It's incredible.
His whole life.
He's
yeah.
super good at it. Yeah. Ejiro Evero.
It shows you the power of reps, Sean.
It is.
You spend 40 years or so saying it. Yeah. Well, probably, I don't know when he started speaking.
Right.
Yeah, 38
right.
years or so when he started.
Yeah. We'll get to Ejiro Evero in just a second, but it's Kafka who we're looking at here. Seth, where did you find this quote from Kafka Sr.?
I found it in an article in The Athletic.
Okay.
In which Mike Kafka Sr., father of Mike Kafka, man that I've said one of my biggest objections is that I sense no juice out of this guy.
Right.
Just like a very bland personality, which I know seems like it shouldn't be a big deal, but it's a big deal to me. I need a guy with some juice where I feel like, okay, there's something going on here that's got a little bit of extra push, a little glitter in the eye or a gleam in the eye or something.
Yeah.
His father says he's got kind of a soft demeanor, but he's very competitive. It's his father saying he's got a soft demeanor. It's just confirmation. If all I had read was that his father said it, then I might think, okay, other coaches with soft demeanors, is that like a Gary Kubiak type or a Tony Dungy type? I don't know. But like both Kubiak and Dungy, I think when I saw interviews with them or when, you know, you see them interacting with players, I just felt more juice from those
guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would you feel better about Kafka if you heard a story through the grapevine that he went and maybe either dog cussed or possibly even beat up his old
man
for saying he was soft?
No, if anything, I'd feel like, okay, the guy's psychotic. Because I'm not saying I need a yeller or a screamer.
Juice comes in many flavors.
Yeah, yeah. I don't need a yeller or a screamer or something like that. The guy who thinks he's trying to be the movie version of a football coach.
Okay.
I need a gleam in the eye of some sort.
Okay.
And then I also didn't like this. Many of you will recall that last year, tight ends coach Andy Bischoff for the Texans.
Yeah.
He claimed that Jeff Driskel was in a class of athlete up with basically Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Said he was in that class where not many quarterbacks were as athletic as Mike. I'm going to get run down by defensive lineman Jeff Driskel.
Yeah.
Jeff, I'm going to get run down by defensive lineman Jeff Driskel.
Yeah.
He said that he was basically in the Lamar Jackson category.
So what did Bischoff say about Kafka?
He's a friend of Bischoff. Says, okay. As Kafka's friend and Giants tight ends coach Andy Bischoff said, he doesn't need to be right all of the time here. He's eager to gather perspective from the rest of the staff. He'll make sure to pull the position group leaders rather than try to be the all-knowing expert, which is great. That's fine. Like, all the praise I see about Kafka is like, boy, he sure is a conscientious young lad. I feel like he's being recommended as either an Eagle Scout or safety patrol. And I don't get any over the top, like, other than from Pat Fitzgerald, who was his coach at
Northwestern. Yeah.
And that's where Kafka first started coaching as a GA and everything.
Yeah.
Fitzgerald, just the whiz bang of a coach himself, will also, you know, will say like, oh, I knew he always knew he was going to be a head coach someday somewhere. Yep. Yeah. Everybody else is like, boy, he's very well prepared. Oh, boy, gosh, yeah, he's very conscientious.
Okay.
And he understands how to add numbers together. Yes, yes.
Would you like to hear anything from the mouth of Kafka himself, and maybe he can convince you?
Yeah, you can play this audio. Yeah. I had listened to all this before, and I didn't want to bore our listeners to death with it, but apparently you don't give a damn.
Let's try
yeah.
one. We'll try one, and then we'll see where it goes. Would you like to hear on... I'm going to let you pick.
Okay.
Would you like to hear how he got into coaching or what he learned from Andy Reid? Which is more relevant to the Texans?
I remember all these. This is when I sat down and I did a deep dive on trying to get some glint of excitement about this guy.
Right.
Let's listen to how he got into coaching.
How he got into coaching. Here we go. Yeah.
The head football coach at Northwestern, my alma mater, reached out, Coach Fitz. And he was like, hey, we're going to have a graduate assistant job open up. Why don't you come and try it out and see if this is something you want to do? And, you know, I was like, okay, this is, you know, talk to my wife and, we made that decision and went to Northwestern and did a graduate year there. And I tell you what, like 3 days into it, I'm like, this is exactly what I want to do. Just love being around the guys, helping like develop those guys, just being around the X's and O's and just kind of getting a different view of how game plans are put together, how the details of the coaching and all those things like really fit my personality and fit what I enjoy doing to begin with. Even as a player, you know, you're a backup quarterback. You're always kind of coaching behind the scenes, helping guys as like the starters out there. So it felt easy to me and felt comfortable, and I just really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, it feels like he's an awesome offensive coordinator. I like everything I've heard from him. It feels like he's an awesome offensive coordinator. I'll admit too, part of the problem with him was that the first thing I watched was when the Giants coaches were mic'd up, the assistants. So it's him and Wink Martindale. The big old dock worker looking guy from
does Wink have a good mic'd up persona?
Yeah,
too?
He yeah. Does? He's yeah. like exactly what you want. No, he's yeah. telling, you know, he's speaking colorfully and everything.
Yeah.
He's got that big beer belly and his guns blazing through his vest and all that. So it's hard to measure up. So he looked much worse by contrast.
Yeah.
Okay, so he likes coaching. We know that about him.
He likes coaching.
Check that off the way. We didn't know that about Josh McCown. They were going to hire Josh
McCown.
That is true. Without him ever actually even working full-time as a coach.
Kafka is a better candidate than McCown.
How do you think you're qualified to be a head coach? Well, I've watched coaches, and it seems like something that would be fun to do. That would be Josh McCown's answer.
Yeah.
Wait, where am I? Who is this guy?
Yeah.
I do wonder, like, he comes from the Andy Reid tree. Reid drafted him out of Northwestern.
Yeah.
He played for Reid.
Yeah.
Coached for Reid in Kansas City for a number of years. Like, what would Andy Reid's interviews have been like back in, like, 1998 with the Packers website? Like, getting to know Andy Reid.
And right,
the,
right.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Was like, he the, yeah. And he was kind of known as, like, a whiz kid. But he was known as a whiz kid.
Yeah.
I've heard no wizardry kid talk.
With here. Kafka?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to the whole Harry Potter Academy or anything.
That academy.
I hear a whole lot of, like, he does really good stuff. And yeah. they ever, you know, he's just, like, he sounds like an Eagle Scout. No offense to Eagle Scouts. But, like, all the Eagle Scouts listening will know. There are different levels of Eagle Scouts. There's some that just kind of went through the motions, and then there's others who have actually saved little old ladies from fires.
Those
are the ones I respect.
You asked the listening audience if there's any coaches with a, quote, soft demeanor who've been successful.
Yeah, other than Tony Dungy was like the one that has won a Super Bowl that I can think of.
Right, because Kafka Sr. Yeah. said that his son, Kafka Jr., interviewing with the Texans, has kind of a, quote, soft demeanor, but he's very competitive.
Yeah.
People texting in Jim Caldwell.
Oh, how many Super Bowls did he win? Was that the...
He went to a Super Bowl with the Colts. Okay. Yeah, he lost to Sean Payton and the Saints in that Super Bowl.
Did he go to... Okay, Caldwell will take, yeah.
Caldwell went to... And Caldwell did one of the better jobs with the Lions in recent years that we've mm-hmm. seen. So Jim Caldwell... I guess the debate is, okay, does he have a soft demeanor? He's super quiet.
He also waited... Well, the problem is, too... Okay, Caldwell got the job when he was how old? He had to have been in his 50s by then,
question.
Was he not?
Yeah, yeah. He's still showing up on odds lists for these jobs,
yeah.
and I haven't heard anybody interview him.
I feel like he would have, like, maybe, I don't like a young guy like Kafka with a soft demeanor. You've got to be fatherly by the time you get the head job.
Right, right.
You know? So
right.
Caldwell
not
fell.
At 36.
Caldwell is gushed about by a lot of his players as this guy that just kind of had a fatherly demeanor about him.
There's a lot of people sending in on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Kubiak.
No, Kubiak. I don't know why. It's so weird. It's so weird that Kubiak had this reputation as being too nice or too soft or anything. Like, you don't know what it was like when Kubiak would would call you out. He never called me out individually in a meeting, but because I saw what happened, I saw it happen to others. And I was I'm not getting on Kubiak's bad side.
I don't know if it's coincidence or if this was just the case. I've heard it more with offensive players than defensive players.
Right.
And
maybe
that's because
that's the offensive coordinator, and he was, or at least, well, even if he wasn't, he was.
Right.
But yeah, he was, and he had more.
Takes that personally.
With those guys. Yeah.
Like David Anderson and Joel Dreesen would say he is totally different than he is at press conferences.
Kubiak, and it's not like he was a jerk or anything. He just was in the press conference. He was going to be very laid back. But I think with Kubiak, though, too, I don't know. It's almost just something you can see and read in the eyes.
Yeah.
And his whole way of going, and maybe Kafka's like that. I just haven't seen it. I'm doing all this as an outsider, so he's going to have to prove it to me if he gets hired.
The best version of Kubiak,
yeah,
I think we can all agree, is the one that roasted John McClane last year at the John McClane
Toast. Yeah, you saw the viciousness there.
He was, he was vicious.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
it was good
really
and funny.
Good.
The other thing about Kubiak was, remember, you know how, like, with my quarterbacks, and now I'm realizing my head coaches too. I wanted to see in them that they could be a pool hall hustler. If circumstances demanded it and morality wasn't an obstacle, could this guy be a pool hall hustler? And I totally think that Gary Kubiak could do that in a heartbeat. Maybe he did it at College Station in his freshman year or something. But I don't see that with Kafka just yet.
Do you see it with D'Amico Ryans?
Yes.
Do you see it with Jonathan Gannon?
That's a good question. Not so sure. Yeah. Steichen, I could.
Steichen was my next one.
Steichen's got a little glint in his eye.
Yep.
Yeah. I worry a little bit with Gannon that I know he's very, very intelligent and very creative and a good football mind, but I worry a little bit that he's a bit too much of an android personality-wise.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not a pool hall hustler.
No. I got to be able to see that you can influence and manipulate people for your own gain. That's
Ejiro Ivero.
A little bit, yeah.
I think so too.
He would be. He's the one where I feel like there'd be the biggest moral obstacle to, because I feel like he is the good Eagle Scout. Yeah. Okay, he's like the one. He's the exceptional Eagle Scout. Now he's the one that rises above and beyond. I feel like he's down a straight and narrow path, but he almost like in a military fashion, just attacking obstacle after obstacle.
Do you want to hear from Ejiro Ivero?
Yes.
Right now? Okay. Would you like to hear about his coaching philosophy or his coaching background?
Philosophy.
Here is the philosophy.
His background, by the way, he was with the Rams he's been with a few teams, but most notably with the Rams for like 5 years with both Wade Phillips and Brandon Staley. He does a lot of things that are like Vic Fangio's defense.
Yep.
And through him, Tom Capers.
And he's had
as well.
Dom Capers with him this year as a consultant. He's been around a lot of really good coaches. Sean McVay, too, obviously on his staff. Here is Ivero's coaching philosophy.
It's about relationships with the players, really investing in the players, getting to know them and building the trust with them, bringing a lot of competency, a lot of experience and knowledge with all the different stops and coordinators that I've been with. And we're going to bring energy. We're going to bring confidence. And we're going to bring a lot of great teachers in terms of the staff to the organization.
As you pointed out, he did surround himself with a lot of really good coaches. They the Broncos, if you're looking for reasons from the Broncos defense why you would get excited about hiring Ivero, and I understand where he is on the pecking order for Texan fans, so I'm not here to try to spoon feed you just, you know, tripe. But he had most of the guys on his defense played their best football this season under him. The good guys became great. The average guys became good. He incorporated a lot of rookies into things here, you know, so the young players got it really, really quickly. He did a good job.
So the text line, the trailer wheel and frame text line, is still recommending guys who were successful head coaches but who may have had soft personalities. My criticism of Kafka. And I'm not name calling. That's just what his father called him.
That's right.
So unless maybe his father's what if his father's like old school,
like a helicopter dad?
I always said he was soft, and he ain't proven me wrong yet.
That's right. reason he couldn't stick as a quarterback because he had a soft demeanor.
All I wanted was for my son to win a state championship that I was robbed of, so he could bring some glory to my family name.
Al Bundy,
and he never did it. He's soft. If then I feel like we gotta hire Kafka. Just out of sympathy for
just
him.
Just be nice.
Okay, a lot of people saying Dick Vermeil was soft. No. Dick Vermeil was kind of a hard ass who also happened to cry.
Yes.
And his players got sick and tired
Stop
of him crying all
Dick
the time.
Vermeil.
Every time I see Dick Vermeil crying in a documentary, I'm thinking about all the players who have been like, yeah, it got old.
Dude.
Real fast. Like whenever Dick Vermeil was trying to punctuate a point or something, and he starts sobbing like a teenager whose puppy was just killed. But yeah, it got a little old. He wasn't soft.
No.
He just cried a lot.
Dude, he had to leave coaching for like a decade and a half
because
it
psychotically
ate into
obsessed.
Him. Yes, when he was the Eagles head coach, he had to get out of it because he was going to kill himself. Not literally kill himself, but like kill himself with the stress.
He wrote a rap song, I Ain't a Softie, I Just Cry a Lot.
Did he write that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was a banger. Mm-hmm. Dick Vermeil, Tom Landry. Yeah. See, I don't think Tom Landry was soft. Tom Landry was taciturn.
Yeah.
He didn't talk a whole lot.
Taciturn.
By the way, defensive-minded coach, but I'm told that they're the worst coaches who ever lived, the defensive-minded coaches.
Yeah.
Invented the 4-3, but whatevs. So, the 4-3 flex. So, let's see.
It was a flex.
Bill O'Brien had a father attitude who worked late at night and comes home drunk and pissed off.
Okay.
Just Pete Carroll count as soft.
Maybe have a beer and...
I don't think... Okay, see, now with Pete Carroll, and I guess maybe soft is the wrong word and we're just using it because that's how his father described him. So...
Poor Kafka, man. Kafka's in town for the interview. He's listening right now.
I feel like we gotta hire Kafka because his father sounds like Tom Brady Sr. Like, he sounds like a little bit of a loose cannon.
Yeah.
It'd be fun to get him on. He'll call up the station when we're we might get a call from him this morning,
dude. Kafka's in for the interview. Hey, I just like to go on a run in the morning and listen to some sports talk. What's the station?
Yeah.
He's asking Nick, what's the station I should listen to? And he's listening right now while he's on the treadmill, hearing how soft he is.
Okay, so as far as Pete Carroll being soft, soft isn't the right word. I think I keep saying I want somebody with juice. Like, and everybody, like, nobody's got more juice than Pete Carroll. Like there's a vivaciousness about him.
Right.
And almost annoyingly so. Somebody else says, what would you rather have, a soft coach or a crazy coach? The answer is, first, that's a false dilemma. You don't have to choose either of them.
Is neither a choice?
It's like, hey, we're going to hang you until you're dead. Like, I don't like that. Well, would you rather be electrocuted? Like, I don't like that either. I'd prefer neither.
I want to live.
Please. Yeah. Truth be told, though, hanging, yeah.
You're given the choice.
Yeah, if you got a good executioner. A lot of times they'll... I don't want to get too graphic of the hanging. I was reading about execution methods a week ago.
Okay, wow.
Podcast
your
coming.
Co-host. Now I'm going back through all the shows in my head.
So I don't... Whatever soft is, I don't think Pete Carroll is it. But he also did manage kind of... Pete Carroll has had to manage his... He's got this philosophy of ultra competition.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have to be a yeller or a screamer. In pro football... the best way to motivate people is you cut people.
Yeah,
like it's
your job.
There's no greater motivator than fear and self-preservation. So, I guess Caldwell and Dungy would be the closest to it. Kyle Shanahan. Okay, have you guys watched Kyle Shanahan on the sidelines lately? I don't think he's a great... I think one of the weaknesses of his as a job candidate was definitely that he does not have a classic head coaching personality. He's offset it with genius... Which is a big one.
Yeah.
Like, Belichick does not have the right personality to be a head coach.
He's a genius.
But he's a genius.
Yeah.
And it goes a long, long way. And I think Shanahan, over the past several years, kind of has grown into that position. Well, like, watch him on the sideline and see kind of his... The way he operates now compared to what he was 10 years ago is different. And, again, I don't need a guy to be a jerk. It's just you gotta make hard decisions and make them very quickly in the moment and not worry about people's feelings.
0780 on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. I feel like Seth is filling out an eHarmony profile for what he's looking for in a head coach. Quote, a self-aware, soft-spoken guy who isn't afraid to give his opinion and take charge. Also, no cats.
The podcast I was on last night, I think it's called the We're Just Fans podcast. They're on YouTube. I kind of stumbled into it as we were chatting about it because we're going over the criteria for what your ideal head coach is. And as we've been doing this for the last couple of weeks, it does feel very much almost like if you overthink it, it's the We're Just Fans podcast.
Okay.
Good group of guys. If you start to overthink it, it's like your buddy that like is always trying to check off boxes when he's looking for a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And he always ends up with girls that might match his criteria, but there's no chemistry there.
Yep.
it's got to be as much about the chemistry as it is about ticking off the boxes, and that's the hard part to judge from the outside.
Yeah, especially on Zoom calls. you know what I mean? Like, it's
an artificial environment. It's like it is like a dating service. It's an artificial environment until you actually get in person and spend some time with each other. And even then, in coaching searches, you don't get a real sense.
Absolutely.
Unless you're Mike McCarthy and you lie to Jerry Jones about how much film you've watched.
And then tell him at the press conference that you lied to him.
Yeah.
All right, Tom Brady. What is Tom Brady? Tom Brady made a little news earlier this week. Jim Gray asked him a question, and sailor mouth Tom Brady came out. Him, we've got Aaron Rodgers on his future as well.
Sailor mouth.
Next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so Tom Brady has his Let's Go podcast that he does with Jim Gray.
Let's go!
Let's go! Brady, okay, I want people to listen to this. Do we think this was staged? Because it got a lot of run. Tom Brady was asked by Jim Gray about his future plans. Here's what it sounded like.
Tom, you're leaving everybody guessing. You've said you'll take your time. Do you have any type of a timetable as to what you might want to do regarding your football career?
Jim, if I knew what I was going to f***ing do, I'd have already f***ing done it. Okay? I'm taking it a day at a time.
Yeah.
I sense you're antagonized by the question.
You're scratching.
It's only the question that everybody wants to hear.
You're scratchy. Scratchy. I appreciate your asking. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's 100%.
I can tell.
Yeah, so that's the. It's so awkward that we've wanted to jump in twice now. Yeah. So is it?
Am I done?
Wait, they're done now. Yeah, they're done.
Yeah, it's 100% staged. All of that stuff staged with Jim Gray. They like I've never seen an interview with him where I didn't think that Brady had the questions beforehand. Yeah. Like, and I almost feel like it was intentionally. The listener was supposed to know that it was staged, because if you know the dynamic between those two, it's not an adversarial thing. I don't think I've listened to a bunch of those interviews. Like they kind of go around to like a stage tour where Brady, instead of giving a speech, will sit there and get interviewed by Jim Gray. It's a smart way for like non-public speakers to do something.
Yeah.
And they have a very comfortable relationship.
Do you think he knew he was going to curse?
Maybe not. That might have been
something seemed to knock Jim Gray off course a little.
Yeah, that might have been what it was. But it was it surprised him. Yeah, but
right.
Brady's not Brady. Remember we had the conversation about good actors and bad actors.
Yeah,
Brady's not a good actor. Like that sounded very forced. It didn't. It didn't sound like he was angry or anything. Like, genuinely angry.
Ben, one more time. Let's judge Brady's acting chops here.
Tom, you're leaving everybody guessing. You've said you'll take your time. Do you have any type of a timetable as to what you might want to do regarding your football career?
Jim, if I knew what I was going to f***ing do, I'd have already f***ing done it. Okay? I'm taking it a day at a time.
Okay, good enough.
It sounded like me reading the teleprompter yesterday when I was just trying to get through this thing, this rehearsal for this for the awards
Sports
show.
Sports awards
yeah,
tonight.
Yeah.
I know you guys can't see me, but f*** that.
Yeah, let it flow, Seth. Screw the teleprompter. That's unvarnished, Seth, right there.
Jim Gray and Tom Brady, I think...
They've been a couple for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah. But I don't. It is interesting that...
Giselle is the jiu-jitsu guy, and Brady's got Jim Gray. Giselle, point Giselle.
I think the thing about Brady is, okay, he's 46 years old or going into his 46-year-old season.
Yeah.
These last couple of years haven't annoyed me when he contemplates retirement because he's older than just about anybody who's ever played the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. It doesn't annoy me that he might want to take a little while to figure out what he wants to do. Plus, this year, he's under zero obligation to anybody. He's a genuine agent. Free agent. Yeah. So if he decides to wait, until August, that's then right. So be it. Texans, and just whatever. If he wants to go play for $1 million, Texans, in August, and so be it.
That would be really interesting if Brady just decided to chill for a while and see if there's any injuries or anything like that.
Right, which is what a lot of veterans are doing that
time
of
year. Is it
harder
a quarterback, though?
Yeah, 100%.
Because you got to get in the system and whatnot.
He's also, he's... The last few years hasn't been the same guy in the offseason this last year to an extreme degree where he missed parts of training camp. Mm-hmm. So I think that would only be if something happened with the Raiders or New England, who knows? Anything could happen.
Yep.
If Bill O'Brien ends up attacking Mac Jones.
Yeah.
Man, I want to say Mac Brown because one of our texters was talking about Mac Jones with a machete because he's angry at him. And Brady's got to come up there in August to smooth things over. Then so be it.
That would be interesting.
It's different.
Not the machete part. That would be really interesting if he used the machete, but the Brady part.
It's different with Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre, for instance, when he was still in Green Bay, because they're under contract with their team. There are other quarterbacks waiting in the wings, presumably. And yet those guys want to take their sweet time. Well, they're under... The thing that's especially infuriating about Aaron Rodgers is that Aaron Rodgers needs time to figure out what he wants to do, even though he's got a deal that he just renegotiated last year. You know, it's not... This isn't a surprise to Aaron Rodgers or anything. And he tried to go through the whole it's not about the money thing last year before he ended up signing a record-setting contract.
Correct.
At the time.
Yep. Yeah. Good segue. Here's Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show yesterday about his future in Green Bay.
If they felt like it was in the best interest of the team to move forward, so be it. You know, that wouldn't offend me. That wouldn't, make me feel like a victim. I wouldn't have any animosity towards the team. I love the team. I love the organization. I love the city. I love the region. You know, I'm a minority owner in the Bucks. Like, I'm going to be a part of the region long after I'm done playing. Like, I have a lot of love. A lot of love for what's going on in Green Bay. And I'd love to finish there. I would. And I might have finished there. You know, who knows? But when I talk about my future, I don't talk in any cryptic terms. You know, I'm pretty direct about how I feel, and I am taking time with my decision. And I am, not egomaniacal in a sense to think that, I should be able to play wherever I want, as long as I want.
Yeah, it's tricky with Rodgers, man. And I think with Rodgers, okay, first of all,
does he know what cryptic means?
I know. Do you believe Rodgers in his whole new kind of like holistic hippie vibe over the last couple of years that he's trying to put out there, and that I think he really wants to believe and grasp himself? Do you really believe it, though, that, like, at his core, he's all of a sudden hey, I'm just a little speck in the universe.
No.
It's about greater things than just me.
No, like, I don't. And because I watched big chunks of this interview, and I don't know if you saw the cut from Gronk last week where Rodgers had gone on McAfee, and we played that cut where he said, I think I can still be an MVP. I think he can still play at an MVP level. Gronk took him to task on a podcast or one of the Fox shows or whatever. I think it was Fox show. About... You don't go on there and say you can still be an MVP. You say you can still win Super Bowls. It's about Super Bowls, not individual awards.
Yeah.
And Rodgers went on for 2 minutes about that, about how it didn't really bother him and that doesn't bother me. And when people, and he wouldn't call Gronk by name until the very end, where he said, I love Gronk, but he talked for literally, I wanted to pull the cut. He wouldn't stop talking.
About how it doesn't bother him.
2.5 minutes about how it didn't bother him.
It's like when you're... It's whenever.
So no, I don't believe the speck in the universe thing.
He might be on his way there, but he's still like working his way to it.
Yes, at least.
Which is another big red flag. Like, honestly, I feel like there's a better chance of Tom Brady having a good season this year than Aaron Rodgers. Because Aaron Rodgers is going through some stuff. We've all been there. We've seen it. You've been through it yourself when you're going through some stuff. And all of a sudden... you're like readjusting your priorities and things. And sometimes it means like time for a career change or it means time for a relationship change, whatever it is. That's what Aaron Rodgers has been going through this last year. And it does not feel like what I want my $40 million quarterback going through. It just isn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know he was banged up this last year, but so much of his whole, it's a scary thing, and I hate to make this analogy again, but the Silicon Valley execs now, in programs who are going like microdosing on LSD or taking ayahuasca trips and all this stuff. It takes these people who have like zero empathy for anybody, and it shows them just a little glimpse of what it's like to be an actual human. And it's almost the most dangerous thing in the world, because it's like now they can exploit the now they know how to exploit the empathy of others. But without, because they've gotten, now they understand a little bit more, but they haven't gone full hippie into it yet. And I think that's where Aaron Rodgers is.
Oh my God.
He needs to just go. He needs to just go take some company public and then fire all the workers or something. That's where that's the stage of life he's in.
He almost sounded like in that cut where he reminded everybody he's a part owner of the Bucks.
Yeah.
It was almost like you can't get rid of me. You can't. You can trade me, but you can't get rid of me. I'm going to be like, in your lives forever.
I think that was a little bit more of pandering, like he did last year when he started invoking the names of great Packers of the past.
Oh yeah.
Because he said it. He said, you know, like Reggie White, the Minister of Defense. Like, dude, are you reading off of index cards? You sound like somebody in an awards show that like doesn't actually know who Reggie White is.
That's funny.
But you're like, and coming up next, Reggie White, the Mister of Defense. You know.
Be great if he mispronounced a few of the names.
Reginald White, everybody remembers
Reginald
him
White.
Him.
Oh, the great Stern.
I was just talking to Reggie White the other day, and boy, he sure does love the Packers.
The great Sterling Sharpe.
Sterling Sharp, you know, you can see him on with Skip Bayless. It's yeah.
By the way, we're gonna get to Shannon in the next segment. okay. Okay, this is Tom Middle screen texted this in on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Geez, Tom, do you kiss your adult son on the mouth with that mouth? Brady kisses his kids on the mouth. He's a known mouth
kisser.
He doesn't French kiss them, but yeah.
I don't know, man. It's weird, dude. It's not like a kiss on the mouth. It's weird, okay?
All right, Payne and Pendergast. John McClain joins us at the top of the hour.
I know people who like kiss family members on the lips, and it's not like whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird, no doubt. All right, John McClain, brought to you by HornSolutions.net. He'll join us at the top of the hour. Seth mentioned Sterling Sharp. He apologized. He apologized for his role in that incident at the Lakers Grizzlies game last Friday. We will hear his apology, and we will put it through the Payne and Pendergast apology ringer next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Shannon Sharp, there was an incident last Friday. Shannon Sharp got into a shouting match with the entire Memphis Grizzlies team.
There was some unpleasantness.
There was.
He was escorted out through the tunnel, but then allowed back on the floor.
Yep.
Many people have pointed out that probably ordinary fan, Joe Fan, even if he's sitting courtside, Joe Fan might not be brought back. And remember when the guy up in Oklahoma City, that was the son of one of the minority owners that got into it with Pat Beverly.
Yep.
And he wasn't allowed back.
Yeah, at the very least, someone sitting in those seats would get escorted to another part of the arena so they could
like
still see the game.
Remain watching it from a suite or something.
Something like that, yeah. But Shannon got to sit right back down. He got it. So he was talking a little trash to Dylan Brooks, saying, Dylan Brooks, you're too small to guard LeBron. And it escalated. And eventually, the entire Grizzlies team got involved.
A little bit of Steven Jackson.
Steven Adams.
Adams as well, yeah. Yep. Steven Jackson was in the crowd.
Steven Jackson, it would have escalated even. It would have gotten worse. Including T. Morant, the father of Grizzlies star point guard Ja Morant. He got into it. He got into it with Shannon Sharp. Here's the play-by-play of the incident.
At the Crypto.com arena, Dylan Brooks was having words with Shannon Sharp.
And you see Steven Adams comes over to protect his guy along with the supporting cast. And then Shannon Sharp still talking. And T. Morant, John Morant's dad, comes over. Had an opportunity to talk to T. Morant. And he said, my blood pressure didn't go up a bit. Nothing but love and respect for Shannon Sharp. It's a bunch of guys talking a bunch of trash.
And just silly.
And just silly. It is.
I mean, it is silly when you're a certain age. I mean, yeah, come on, Shannon, you're 50 or something.
Right.
It's and he knows it, which we're about to hear.
And Shannon knows he's a public figure.
Yeah.
You know, that's there's
children watching, damn it.
Technically a media member. Man's got a family, by God.
That's what I tell myself during every commercial break. Seth, come on, there's children watching. And I forget.
And then the bell rings. Yeah. Yep. Here's Shannon Sharp on his show, Undisputed. He apologized for the incident.
As you probably have heard or have seen Friday night at the Lakers game, I want to apologize for my behavior. You know, guys, I've preached for the last 6.5 years, responsibility and accountability. And I take full responsibility for what transpired. It does not matter what Dylan Brooks said or how many times he said it. Me being the responsible person, me having the platform that I have and having so many people look up to me, I was wrong. I should have lowered the temperature in the arena. Instead, I turned the temperature up and I let it get out of hand. And I want to apologize to a few people. First of all, I want to apologize to the Lakers organization. I apologize for any harm or unwanted attention that I brought to your organization. I want to apologize to the fans that were in attendance and the fans that watched on television, because that's not what you paid for and that's not what you tuned in to watch. I want to apologize to the Memphis Grizzlies. Grizzlies organization and fans, I am sorry. More specifically, I want to apologize to Dylan Brooks. Bruh, I apologize. I wish you the best of luck the rest of the season and continued success. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm not perfect. And I'm never going to say that wasn't Shannon Sharp, because that was me. That was just me getting out of character. And I'm sorry for all those that saw my action and took offense to my actions. I am sorry.
Okay.
So I felt that felt like a genuine apology. The only time it drifted into non-apology is when he mentioned how many times he said it. That was the part where he's like, whatever he said and how many times he said it, that was a little, I feel like he started to veer towards, excusing himself.
Yes.
But I think he pulled it back.
100%.
No matter 100%. What he said or how many times he said it.
Right. So that was Shannon Sharpe's way of saying, hey, I'm not alone here in the culpability. Yeah. I thought the other thing right after that I wrote down that didn't really feel like an apology, felt a little more like a humble brag. Talking about the many, many people that look up to him.
That's true. That's true.
Reminded us of how many kids look up to him.
Okay, yeah, I like that, though. Okay, but he got away with it, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think by going over the top and the other stuff, I think he got away with that a little bit.
We'll give our grade here at the end. But
I didn't catch that part, yeah.
On this show, we subscribe to the 5 elements of an apology theory.
Yes, it's basically... The elements of an apology that has the best search engine optimization.
It's the one we go by. The one that comes up.
Because I ain't scrolling down.
I just have to cut and paste it off of the main
yeah.
Google page. Okay, so the first one is expressing regret.
Yes.
He went over the top doing
that. He did,
that.
Yeah. I think he expressed it felt like genuine regret.
I mean, if we had to go back and count how many times he said the word sorry.
Yeah.
Over under was like 11 and a half. Like He went out of his way to express regret.
It didn't read like a hostage video either.
At all.
Like, it felt like it was coming from his heart. Yeah.
Accepting responsibility. He literally said the words, "I accept full responsibility."
Okay, that's good.
Literally said that.
He might have the same search engine that we do.
Maybe. Well, let's see.
We don't go by Bing Lopez.
The next three are interesting. The next three are the 3, 4, and 5 elements of an apology here. I don't know if these all fit. He's 2 for 2 so far.
Yeah.
Number 3 is making restitution.
That's a tough one. I feel like, you know what? This is what I would say. His time, the money he gets paid per minute on television is pretty hefty. I would say, what do they do, a 2-hour show?
It's at least 2 hours, I think. Yeah.
He's probably clocking in at about, several $1,000 per minute almost.
Yes,
on,
probably is.
So I think just by
thank you for depressing me.
Taking that time from the show, which was also still also generating ratings. I feel like that's his time is money, like quite literally on that TV show.
I like where your head's at.
I feel
Seth
like the restitution.
Payne.
Yeah, and but what's he like? Who's he going to make restitution to?
Right.
Is he supposed to donate money to a
Dylan
middle-aged
Brooks foundation?
Middle-aged public spectacle avoider foundation or something. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm going to donate victims of heckling. VOH is a great charity, and I'm going to donate for this show to VOH.
Counseling for hecklers.
Yeah.
There's
CFH.
Always something behind it. There's always some kind of insecurity behind it.
I like your thought process there. The restitution was the amount of time on his show that he donated to the apology itself.
And I guess, you're not making anybody financially whole or anything, but it's close enough. Yeah.
You can give him a ding. Genuinely promising change. I feel like he did the opposite of that at the end.
What did he say?
I'm not going to tell you that this isn't what Shannon Sharp. This is Shannon Sharp. I don't know.
So it may happen again.
I mean,
we're going to see how the ratings do.
Yeah,
I'm going to be frank with you.
Right.
Ratings have never been better.
Right.
Frankly, this 1 minute that Seth Payne is saying I'm sacrificing is actually going to probably be the highest rated. We're going to get free advertising when people talk about it on the radio and on the reaction videos on the internet.
I feel like he didn't really genuinely promise any sort of change. If anything, he warned us that it might happen again.
Okay, the other one, this last one, I always have a tough time too. The requesting forgiveness.
Right.
I'm torn on that one. I feel like if you're genuinely apologizing, you shouldn't end with, so I'm asking you this favor now,
feels
which is
redundant.
Please make me feel better by forgiving me. Yeah. I just, if you want to forgive me, so be it. If not, I understand.
That's a bonus point element to me of an apology. If they do that at the end and they're not over the top about it, and they say, so I hope that you would forgive me. So I would hope that you would forgive me, not like begging for forgiveness. That's over the top.
Let me tell you this. Whenever I'm having a customer service issue, or when I think there might be a genuine issue with a company or something or a person, I always try to, like, at the end, like, in just trying to, like, you know, extend an olive branch, say, like, listen, this is the way I feel. I understand your point of view. If you don't feel the same way, I get it. And, you know, no hard feelings or what have you. And I don't know if that's, I think sometimes that works out for me, and sometimes it probably, I go in the box of like, okay, this guy's not going to sue us, you know?
Yeah.
So it depends on who, if I'm dealing with an individual, I try to be very diplomatic like that. If it's like, if I feel like I'm talking to AI, I don't bother with it.
Okay.
Or you know, somebody that's just going through a script down in, at the call center.
That makes sense. Yeah. What grade do you give Shannon Sharpe for his apology? He did a decent job fulfilling. The first two are the most important to me, expressing regret and accepting responsibility.
I'm going
to
grade this more with my gut than with the Rubicon.
Empirically, right, yeah.
Is that what it's called? Rubric. Is it a rubric? No, sure. Rubicon's a river. So I'm going to do this more.
Rubik's Cube?
The rubric. No, they do these rubrics now. I don't know. It's like the new math. I don't get any of it. So I would say A-.
A minus.
Yeah, so he overcomes some of the missed tick marks by just feeling genuinely apologetic.
Okay.
Yeah.
A minus. Good job, Shannon Sharpe. Can't wait for you to apologize for doing it again.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, Texans, they're interviewing a couple of prospective head coaches today. Who knows? Maybe one of them's an early riser and they're hanging out drinking some coconut water with Nick Caserio as we speak. I believe the Ejiro Evero interview is over Zoom today because I'd read he was in person for his first interview. But Mike Kafka is presumably in town. That's an in-person interview. Unless they went to the Kofster.
Did they do it like they did with Ed Reed and fly up to...
And go get him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ed Reed not out of a coaching job that he never actually had.
Contract never got ratified. Bethune-Cookman.
He tried to pretend he was Deion Sanders is the problem.
Didn't work.
He was riding around in a golf cart criticizing the campus before he officially had the job. I don't think Deion did that until after he had the job, at least.
I wish the Texans hadn't ratified his contract back in 2013. Life would have been a whole lot easier. So Mike Kafka, OC for the Giants. Ejiro Evero. Did I get that right, Ben? Do you have Evero 1? I just want to make sure. I want to respect our possible future head coach by... pronouncing
my name is Ejiro Evero.
Okay, good. I got it right. Ejiro Evero. Okay, good.
Broncos.
Got it. Thank you. They're both interviewing today. Second interviews. I think these, my sense I get, Seth, from Texan fans, and you and I went through the approval rates on the Twitter polls yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
These are two of the lower rungs on the ladder for this coach search for Texan fans.
Yeah, and I guess for
no
for
disrespect
Texan fans,
to either guy.
You know, and I was talking to a listener yesterday who said, well, how come his question started off with how come D'Amico and Gannon are the favorites, et cetera, et cetera. And I had to clarify and say, look, we don't actually know who the favorites are. You know, there's
public who the opinion. Texans like.
Yeah, as far as who the Texans like, there is no consensus. We don't really know who they like. And if they're being, you know, open and honest about the process with themselves, maybe they don't have definite hard set favorites yet. That's the reason you have second interviews, is to start to really just try to flesh things out and get to know things.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who the actual favorites are. They're the betting favorites, but we go through this every year with free agent players, with coaches. JJ Watt, where's he gonna go? Turns out he went to the Cardinals.
Wasn't even on the
Cardinals
board.
Were never even in the conversation from all the quote unquote insiders.
That's right.
So it just seems like those three coordinators that are going to be in the Eagles versus the 49ers game this weekend are the top three. But a lot of that's just based on public opinion.
Sure, no doubt. And yes, public opinion.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, for the public opinion with D'Amico, it's grounded in a lot of nostalgia and good feelings from when he was a player here.
I think with Kafka and Evero, I wonder if either of those guys even entered this season expecting to be in this discussion.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think that's a little bit of what happened last year with D'Amico. When D'Amico decided after one interview, you know what, I'm not taking any more, and I'm going to focus on being a better defensive coordinator. And I think also getting the presentation ready and understand, like getting really thinking about exactly what am I going to do when I'm a head coach.
Yeah.
Because you got to have, I think what probably jumps up on these guys is, oh, wow, if I get this job, if hypothetically, if I were to be interviewing now and I get this job and I got to walk into a building next week and be, you know, moving 100 miles an hour, if you don't have a really good plan in place, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Yep.
So that's where I think these guys probably are right now. That maybe they're gonna take this process. Maybe I'm wrong, obviously, but that these guys are mentioned more next year than this year.
The other bit of news that would affect the Texans and their coaching search involves Sean Payton. According to FS1 and Colin Cowherd, the Broncos have made the decision that they want to hire Sean Payton as their next head coach if he's interested. Russell Wilson also told ownership in Denver that he wants Payton as his coach, according to Colin Cowherd. Cowherd has a strong connection with Payton and says it's now up to Payton as to whether or not he wants to coach. So this thing is, this could break any number of ways, Seth, this whole coaching carousel right now. There's only five openings, which makes this go-around unique. This is as small a number of openings as we've seen in a coaching cycle in a long, long time. Last year, there were 10. There were double this last year. Right now, D'Amico Ryans is not the favorite for any of the five. Mm-hmm. And again, it's betting favorite. It's Vegas. I get it. How much does Vegas know? Payton is a prohibitive favorite right now to become the next Broncos coach, likely based on this news that we're hearing from FS1. Brian Flores is a pretty strong favorite, relatively speaking, to be the next Arizona Cardinals head coach. Monty Ossenfort there, former Patriots front office guy who was there in New England when Flores was there. Jeff Saturday. Yeah. I don't know. This is the one that I don't know that I'm totally buying, but he's the betting favorite right now to be the Colts head coach.
The favorite. Which is insane to me.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the biggest losses that organization has taken, the fact that anybody even actually thinks that Saturday should be the favorite. Ursay should be deeply offended by that.
That they take it this seriously.
Yeah.
Shane Steichen is the 2-1 favorite to be the Panthers' next head coach. And right now, Jonathan Gannon and D'Amico Ryans kind of neck and neck, but Gannon the favorite right now to be the next Texans' head coach.
You know what's surprising to me is I think sometimes, at least when I look at those odds boards, my first instinct is that I'm looking at it through the filter of, okay, these are the guys that organization likes. But obviously, there's another side to it, which is which guys actually want to coach for those teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody, nationally, locally, everywhere. In Timbuktu, they've got opinions about why the Texans, nobody would want the Texans' jobs, supposedly. And they've got their power-listed items. I'm surprised that more people don't talk about what a train wreck situation it must feel like to walk into the Colts.
Yeah.
You know, where Ursay, who is obviously an erratic individual, is getting increasingly involved in decisions on the field and for, you know, which quarterback starts. And I think if you look at the difference between Cal McNair and Jim Irsay, whichever criticism you want to levy at those guys, I think there's only one that's a meddling owner.
Yeah.
And that's Irsay. Irsay's a meddling, erratic dude. And I think there are a lot of people. Jeff Saturday might be the most viable candidate just because he's the one most likely to take the job.
Yeah. Maybe so. Ursay's definitely the more worrisome of the two.
Yeah.
It's not even close, really.
If I were a candidate, what I would worry about with the McNairs, I think, is that I think the McNairs will give you every resource that you ask for and want, and that is big. Not all NFL owners, no matter how rich they are, act like that. But I think the whole Easterby / O'Brien dynamic would be that, all right, the McNairs seem malleable, or they might fall prey to somebody's influence that is in opposition to what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, like, how can I be sure that it's going to be me and Nick Caserio that are you know, influencing the owner and not some third party all of a sudden?
This is where I would hope they look. This is where I always say anything that comes up relative to that, I say, hopefully they were looking around the building this year.
Yeah.
And by the building, I mean in the stadium on game day.
Like,
that was the collateral damage.
Yeah.
Was just the eight just moribund Sundays that people were spending out there watching opposing fans cheer for your team.
Yeah.
It was that decision
right.
that got the. I mean, there's a number of things, but that decision was the gateway to get you into that spot.
Yeah.
Don't let that happen again. Do conventional things. Don't do crazy things. You have a GM, go get a good head coaching candidate, draft a quarterback, and let's be a normal NFL team and get good again, you know? Speaking of Texans, this one is a former Texan, but Charles Omenihu, yesterday, now I'm behind a paywall with this article about Charles Omenihu.
Why'd you do that? What website is that? What website is asking
Mercury
me to pay
News.
Money? Oh, you got to be careful with Mercury News.
Yeah, the Mercury News. I'm going to ESPN.com right now. They'll feed me the article for free. Charles Omenihu was arrested yesterday. Former Texans defensive lineman, current San Francisco 49er defensive lineman.
Who's been a very impactful player. You know,
yes.
He's no Nick Bosa,
no.
But he's had a good season.
He has indeed. He was arrested on suspicion of misdemeanor domestic violence on Monday, according to a news release from the San Jose Police Department. He was booked at the Santa Clara County Jail, was released after he posted bail, and was served with a restraining order. Police got to a residence late in the afternoon on Monday. A woman who is Omenihu's girlfriend called the police, said that Omenihu pushed her to the ground during an argument. No visible injuries were observed on the woman, who did complain of pain in her arm but declined medical attention. And the 49ers said in a statement, they are aware of the matter involving Charles Omenihu, and they are in the process of gathering more information. But as you point out, Seth, key member of their defensive line rotation, 4.5 sacks this season. He had 2 sacks and a forced fumble in their win over Seattle in the wild card round of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And for Charles Omenihu individually, he's in a contract year. He's a free agent after this season.
Yeah.
So we don't know what happened in this case. You know, hopefully whatever happened, the truth, whatever the truth is, justice is served appropriately here. But certainly
the timeline makes it very, very sticky for the 49ers.
Yes, yes.
We've had situations like this over the last several years.
C.J. Mosley, Tremaine Brock, a few of them, yeah.
Yeah, the 49ers, you know what? It's kind of like
a disproportionate.
The Raiders always get the bad reputation, mostly because they have like 7 fans who dress up in medieval armor.
Right.
But really, the 49ers have had, including in their parking lot, after games, they've had, it seems like, more bad issues than the Raiders. Yeah.
I've told, by the way, you're listening to KLT, KLT, HD2, and Odyssey Station. I've told this story before. In 2013, when the Texans played Sunday Night Football in San Francisco,
yeah,
the Raiders were playing a game later that night on Sunday night, like late Sunday night, because the A's had the ballpark during the day for the playoffs. So Amy and I went to both games. We weren't planning on going to the Raider game, but the Texans were getting blown out. That was the
A's were in the playoffs.
That was the pick six season for Matt Schaub. So we left the Texans game early, took the BART train over to Oakland, and went to the Raider game. I felt way safer at the Raider game than I did at the 49er game.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly.
I feel like with the Raiders, they know the public perception, and you have a lot of Raiders fans that are going above and beyond trying to combat
it's
the public
perception.
It's a
costume party is what it is.
Yeah, where the 49ers, I feel like, because almost just simply because it's San Francisco, and San Francisco has a reputation of being like the, you know, the Stanford, the Silicon Valley, the hoity-toity, I feel like they got they've got a chip on their shoulder.
A chip on their shoulder.
Inferiority complex about their toughness.
Yep.
Where the Raiders got nothing to prove.
Yep.
When they had the owners meeting over at Memorial City one year, I went and I wanted to interview some Raiders fans because, like, hey, I'm going to get some crazy audio. I could not have been more disappointed.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of just eloquent, well-spoken people wearing spiky shoulder pads.
Happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.